This is RevTech Podcast, where we discuss everything from business processes to measurement and technical alignment. The RevTech mission focuses on effectively managing and optimizing the go-to-market strategy through methodologies, tools, and best practices. We discuss the success criteria and technical fit guides for decision-making and ensure solutions align with the business goals. Our guest is Rob Rebholz, the CEO of Superglue.io. It's great to have you on. Where does podcast find you?
I'm in Chicago right now for Catalyst.
Very exciting. It's starting today, right?
Tomorrow?
Okay. You got a nice and early.
I know.
Yeah. Great. That's great. Well, we're excited to have you on the show. Let's just kick this off and hear the elevator pitch for what Superglue is and does.
Yeah. So Superglue is a automation platform for partner teams. So we help partner teams automate all kinds of recurring tasks from onboarding through enablement, nurturing relationships, engagement, co-selling, and even internal enablement. So ultimately, the goal is to help companies source more revenue, and we integrate into tools like Salesforce, Crossbeam, PRMs, but even marketplace listing tools.
Yeah, which is very exciting for people maybe not in the partnership space. There, you're really just left on your own to do a lot of this stuff, right? Like, yeah. It's rare that companies build in this architecture into Salesforce or HubSpot or whatever their CRM is. So it's a nice tool to have. And how did you start Superglue? What led up to that decision? I know you were in direct mail before. Why Superglue?
Yeah, built a MarTech business, right? And we scaled that business. It's a direct mail automation platform. We scaled that business through partnerships. Like, to this day, we drive 70% of revenue in that company through partners like Salesforce, as well as SIs and GSIs. And that's where I realized, like, A, there's obviously a huge opportunity in partnerships. And B, there is this issue that partner teams, the ones that are the least, that lack the tools to automate and all of the recurring work, right? Like, smart in marketing, right? No marketer would work without marketing automation. No AE would do their job without sales engagement tools. And partner teams are like kind of left behind with manual processes and Salesforce reports and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And Google Sheets or Excel sheets to manage a lot of it.
Yeah.
And why the name Superglue? I don't know if I've ever asked this.
Because I can pronounce it. As a German. No, but ultimately the idea is really like we have all of these tools, right? And they're somewhat disconnected. We have PRMs and then we have the CRM and we have Crosby. And all of these tools are like kind of trying to push data into the CRM, like especially, right, like account mapping tools and PRMs. But yep. People lack the workflows that connect everything, right? If you have a portal, you usually struggle with adoption. So how do you create an experience around it, and how do you leverage all of the insights you have in your CRM? If you have Crossbeam, right, like you have all of this overlap data, but how do you merge overlap data with deal data to build workflows that on one hand uncover the biggest opportunities, but on the other hand also kind of help your AEs with their sales processes? So we try to connect everything and glue it together.
I like the first explanation. And where are you guys in terms of like the financing journey? Have you raised money? Are you looking to raise money? What does that look like?
Yeah, we raised $2.5 million. Yeah, right now, not raising, just building the business. We're in a fortunate situation right now, right?
Yeah, and how old is the company? Three?
Two and a half years.
Okay. That's a nice place to be, to just be building the business and not have to worry about financing. That's great. Do we want to jump in and see a demo of the platform?
Yeah, yeah. What's the use case you want to share with us?
I would show you a co-selling use case. Give you a bit of an overview and we'll try to keep it lean. Tell me if you want to dig deeper.
We will.
All right. So this is the platform, the interface. What you see here is like all of the automations that I have running. Like I said in the beginning, basically company users for all kinds of use cases from the moment you are first talking to a partner through engagement and co-selling, et cetera. In the platform, you have just a high-level overview. What I'm going to show you now is automations, but we also have the ability for people to create audiences and like run one-off campaigns, right? If I'm a partner manager and I want to let everybody in New York know that I have an event in Brooklyn, or I want to update all of my agency partners about something that...
A new feature or...
Yeah, very easy to do. And the last thing is we have this Gmail extension that helps you, basically provides you snippets, templates, and a couple of functionalities. So we eliminate the need to write any email twice. But what I want to show you is like the automation stuff, because that's, I think that's where it gets really interesting. So I'm going to show you a co-sell workflow. I'm not going to go into too many details here, but one thing that's interesting about Superglue when you set up triggers is that in traditional MarTech, you can set up triggers based on stuff like, for example, deal stages, right? Like, oh, there is a deal that's in a negotiation stage and it's been stuck in there for 60 days. The thing about Superglue is now that we enable you to now go from the deal through your sales force, through the customer accounts, and for example, identify a cross-beam overlap, which is always attached to an account, and merge that data. So now we allow you to build a trigger that actually merges overlap data with deal data, which means we help you identify where your partners actually need it. So this can be done with cross-beam data. We can do this with ACE data, all kinds of data, right? And then the other thing that's unique about how Superglue works, we work with notifications when workflows trigger. You can also fully automate stuff. So if this workflow triggers, the way this looks for the partner manager is that they get a notification in Slack. So once this is up and running, what Superglue does for me as a partner manager, I get these notifications when I need to interact with my partners in Slack. It's a bit of a, you know, everybody has a co-pilot nowadays, but that's kind of how you can imagine it, right? Like basically Superglue tells you, hey, this is what just happened. You know, we've got this deal that's stuck. So now as a partner manager, I can decide what happens next. I can approve the workflow, discard it, or I can customize it. Yep. If I click customize, I'm taken into this interface and I can review the messaging and, you know, trigger this message. If I trigger a message, it's always sent from my own Gmail or Outlook account as a partner manager, which means that this feels personal, right? Like for the receiving party, this doesn't feel automated, which is why we have like 3 to 5 times higher open rates, engagement rates, click rates, because obviously if you get an automated email from your PRM telling you, hey, you need to log in, or from Crossbeam telling you there's an overlap, you're going to treat that differently than if I sent you an email and I'm like, hey, Lizzie, I think we should work on this deal. The other thing that's interesting, I'm jumping back into the workflow, about these workflows, is that these workflows aren't linear, right? I don't just go to my partner and ask them for help. I need to involve my AEs. So what we've built is this unique ability for Superglue to initiate conversations between AEs and partner managers. So the next step might be, and again, I can configure this however I want, that Superglue now reaches out to my AE and starts a conversation between my AE, this guy, you know, and the app and me, and tells us, hey, the AE, I saw you working on this deal. Looks like you need help. We have this partner that could help. Do you actually want help? Yes or no? So now they can influence the workflow. They could also just talk to me and ask me a question.
Yep.
So what we've seen with that is that this really drives adoption. So this is like the internal enablement. Rather than doing trainings and telling people how to use widgets, I figure out when my AE needs a partner or when a partner adds value, reach out to them, tell them why, and all they got to do is click yes or no. And what that leads to is that AEs like instantly start adopting this. Are they? Because obviously, like I meet them when they need something, and I make the getting help as easy as clicking yes or no. And the last step that I'm going to show you in this, because we said we're going to do a mini demo, is like the multi-stakeholder messaging. Traditional marketing automation, even like HubSpot, can only send either external or internal emails. But now if the AE says she wants help, I not need to connect my AE with my partner. So Superglue can basically build or trigger messages, again, sent from partner managed inbox to the partner and the AE, where I connect the two of them. And then obviously, you know, over time, Superglue can keep tracking if these two talked, if the deal moved forward, so that we stay on top of stuff, which I think is very important, because what we see a lot is that, and this is not just related to co-selling, but also like onboarding enablement, people tell their partners what they expect and then forget about them, right? Just like in sales, velocity matters, right? Like there is excitement, there's a willingness to help, you got to leverage that. And if it takes too long to get back on stuff or you forget about stuff, you obviously lose out on a lot of opportunities.
This looks like you're trying to bring more transparency into this relationship. You're trying to create more value out of this relationship based on this workflow.
You also want to ensure that there is some sort of quality of conversation and the pace of that. But a question I have is, how do you measure effectiveness? Is there anything on your platform that tells you, look, you know, maybe that pace is not enough, or maybe the quality needs a little bit more engagement of someone who can come from the product marketing and maybe explain a little bit more about the product, right? Like anything like that, that platform could provide.
That's a really good point. So ultimately the vision is like, you know, our big vision is like to 10x, right, partner teams, right? To take what a partner manager does and give them the ability to do a lot more, because we help them be more data driven, right? We tell them what's going on, where there's actually, you know, money to be made ultimately. And then we kind of replace the manual workflow. And we have the, like, we didn't do the AI capability stuff and that kind of stuff, right? We can hyper-process emails, etc. And then there's an important question, like, how do I track performance? There are two ways to track performance or look at performance. There are leading indicators. So I'm going to jump back into the platform. So the leading indicators are things just like activities, right? So in the platform, I can see, and this is obviously my dummy account, but I can see just like volume, right? I have use cases. I see the volume, how many messages I send, for instance. But then I also see like quality scores, right? An open rate and a reply rate gives me a quality indication. And keep in mind, not every workflow needs a reply, but I can look at this stuff and our customers do that. So they do look at, you know, I'm like, hey, I've, you know, with this one customer, and like we also track how many people are engaged, right? With one customer, they like small case, we have, usually our customers are bigger, but we have this one customer where they had like just two people, and the two people within 2 months engaged 700 people on top of what they usually did. And, you know, 700 people that they wouldn't have talked to within 2 months. And then they looked at the data. They looked at the open rates. They had open rates above 60%, which is spectacular, up to 80% for the workflows where they wanted replies, depended on the workflows, right? They had very high reply rates, up to 25, 30%. So what we've shown there is that we've driven engagement. People are interested. People are replying. This stuff matters. That's the leading indicator. And then obviously the lagging indicator is the impact on sourced revenue very often. We don't track that. That's something that you track in other tools. We're always thinking about it. And, you know, there might be some stuff on the roadmap, but that's something that I've seen people kind of try to assess. Just compare like pre and post super glue, right? You have obviously like a certain ramp time. What happens, for example, how many deals are super glue uncovering that? Because we see that people max out, right? Like if we have this recent case where we have a company that they work with AWS, and the AWS team is like, you know, we can't do more. We just like the amount of deals that we work on, like that's it. So we build workflows to take them basically add more deals, and we could see that they were stagnating and they added more deals to where they were kind of stuck. But it's a bit more of a complex question.
Well, and I think the interesting thing there is like, partnerships teams are very often measured on the lagging indicator. So sourced and influenced revenue, right? And like,
yeah,
there's no perfect way to do any of it. A lot of it can be done this year. And there are tools out there that are helping do that. But that is like a big focal point. We don't have what sales and marketing has, which is all the leading indicators. And yeah, like, if someone's like, so what are you doing? Why aren't you sourcing more revenue? You have nothing to point to. Like, you could be reaching out to a million people, setting up calls, meeting with them, and you're like, I'm doing everything I can, but you don't have anything to actually show it unless you go through all your emails and put it together. Yeah,
exactly. And in marketing, right, everybody looks at the customer lifecycle, and it's everything. And people know that if I don't have something, if I have a website,
a funnel, yeah.
Yeah, if I don't have a funnel, if I don't have a loyalty program, I know people aren't going to come back. Unless I have the most amazing product in the world, right? And a lot of pull. But in most cases, you need to create some type of program, keep people engaged, maintain relationships so that when the opportunity arises, they remember you, they trust you, they feel valued, and they buy your stuff. And I think the same is true with partners. But the status quo, if we're very honest to ourselves, we do these lunch and learns, we send people emails, like one long email afterwards, and then we kind of forget about them. Maybe we send them the login to the PRM, but that doesn't necessarily make them love us.
Yeah.
What would you tell a CFO that is asking you a question, how do I translate, you know, all these actions into the meaningful financial output for my team, right?
Nah.
I mean, I understand we can talk about activities. We can talk about a lot of that stuff that matters, because we know that these conversations are the beginning of something that will eventually end up somewhere. But
it's actually pretty straightforward to build a business case. You know, you can go into your CRM and you can look at, for example, the last activity dates, and you can identify how many people are engaged and are driving revenue. And then you can start to extrapolate. And usually this is like, we're talking about 10, 20% of the ecosystem is engaged. If we define engagement as like people I have talked to in the last half year. Okay, 90% of the ecosystem is engaged. What if I can get X percent of these people to the same level as, you know, my engaged 10% are that are driving revenue? And I can run the numbers and I can build a business case. So that's the engagement. This is not much different than what I do in marketing. If I build a MarTech business case for a tool, I do similar stuff. And then you can look at, of course, like deals, like you can look at the, obviously, the impact of partners on close rates, and you can run similar numbers, like how many deals would partners attach to, how many are we attaching them now? I think partner teams don't build business cases usually, or they don't have experience building business cases, but it's not that difficult. And a lot of the data is there. You obviously need to make assumptions, but it is, a lot of the data is available.
Yeah, it's basically like if we can increase our source and influence partner deals 10% with using this tool, what would that look like? I'm wondering if you get this feedback, but like, does the super glue start to justify the costs for Crossbeam or PRM or others, especially Crossbeam? Because I think it's data that I use a lot as a partnerships leader going in and evaluating partnerships, but then that data is sitting in our case, Salesforce. And I've like written this whole process for how salespeople should use it, but they're not using it. And then I'm like, why am I paying for that? You know, so do you see that happening where it actually starts to justify other costs?
Yeah, that's a really good point. What I just did is I looked at the revenue, the upside potential, but we could look at the cost of partner teams, right? Partner managers aren't cheap. So do I want my partner manager to manually reach out, check in with people, or do I want to automate that, do more of it? And the other thing is that these tools, portals have adoption issues. It's kind of like having, if we go back to, word of MarTech, it's like having a beautiful e-commerce website and no loyalty program that drives people to the website. Well, same with a PRM, right? Like if I can't just send people a PRM and be like, hey, take care of yourself. And yeah, cross-browsing, I think, is a good one. We don't see it that much. What you're describing is, I think, what a lot of people struggle with. There's all this data. They're like, hey, AEs, like there's a new way of selling, change your workflow, do this, do that. But I think AEs are just crazy overwhelmed, right? Like, and telling them, like, there's a new AI tool, then there's partner data, and then there's this other new way of selling. I think, they're just overwhelmed. So we just be like, hey, how about we don't tell them to change their ways, but just think more about, like, meeting them where they are, where they would need us. I see that adds a lot of values, and people love it once it's up and running. We have a lot of discussions and partnerships about enablement, and everybody thinks that they can change AEs.
Yeah, it's very challenging too. This is like going on a sidetrack, but so much sales tech comes out all the time because there is money to invest in sales tech. But sometimes I'm like, can we simplify these stacks or make it fully automated for them? Because like, it's like, make sure you set up your gong. Then they have this new video show for follow up. Then we have these, and it becomes very overwhelming. So,
yeah, absolutely. You know what I love about AEs though is that AEs are extremely willing to experiment with all these tools and figure out like how to be
good AEs. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. The best AEs, they buy their own tools sometimes. So they're like, I need this tool. I'm going to pay if it's seed based, right? In partnerships, we're not there yet. But
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of the mentality of the people in these two groups, right? Just get the guys. I'm not saying somebody's better, somebody's worse, but I think when you are in sales, you have to be opportunistic. That's your main character.
You're going
to be naturally creative. So when you're creative, you are willing to try things that are working or working better.
Yeah.
You can't blame them for willing to try something else. It's just you need to ensure that you are not replacing something with worse outcome or potentially worse outcome than what you already have. If something doesn't work, they leave the company or they just move to something else.
Yeah.
Whereas in partnership, everything's based on the relationship. And you don't want to shake up too many things because you know how long it takes you to build a business relationship, any relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I remember when 10, 15 years ago, AEs, you know, when we started to think about, and we've overdone it, we've totally overdone automation in sales. But I remember when people were like, oh, I can't use tools, automation, etc. Because selling is also about relationships, maybe even more so, because you build a relationship with somebody who doesn't know you, pays you. So I would argue this whole story about partnerships being an art and not a science is exactly what we had in selling before we thought about fun. Again, we've overdone a lot of stuff, but before we started to put systems in place to be more systematic. And automation, if it's used well, and by the way, that's why we have this little co-pilot functionality where the tools tells you what's happening until you feel comfortable and you can put stuff on autopilot, right? If you're like, this works, this feels good. But I think that's what's holding partner teams back, like this, the fear of ruining relationships, not just in sales, marketing too, right? If I spam my customers with shitty emails, they're going to unsubscribe and they're going to leave. They're not going to come back. So I would argue that that's a bit of an excuse in partnerships and that we need to go beyond it.
Well, and I think part of it is like, how big is the team, right? So like you set up one or two people on a partnerships team and you're like, let's go build some integration. So you like build your first integration. And it's like, okay, now we have to like establish this partnership and like figure out what we do. But that team probably is off building the next integration and the next integration. And we're not expanding the team to build out necessarily, unless you work at a company that invests heavily in a partnership teams, to maintain that first partnership you built. You're just on to the next one, the next one, the next one. And so I think what a tool like Superlude does is help you still maintain that partnership and grow that first partnership while continuing to do other things and show the value there. It's like the teams are overwhelmed. It's not that they don't want to do the things for the most part.
I'm with you. I think especially in partnerships, like partner teams have so many people that they should build relationships with. And I think most partner teams, they're good at maintaining relationships with like key people within top partners. But what about the long tail of partners? And what about the secondary contacts at your top partners, right? Like, you know, my previous business, when we built that with Salesforce, or we heavily leaned into our Salesforce relationship, I did this assessment at one point in time, and I realized I have 500 AEs that I have some relationships with, 500 just within Salesforce. And the people that I have real relationships with are like 20. So that was the thing. It's like, do I just neglect everybody and just pretend they're, you know, not there, or try to manually stay in touch, or do I find another way to maintain this relationship? And thing is, if I don't stay in touch with somebody, at least drop them an email every 3 months, they're not going to remember me. Salesforce AEs do like one or two lunch and learns a week. However much they love you, they're probably going to forget about you after 3 weeks, or at least 3 months.
There's a problem of capacity, right? Like you just can't do much with one person or two people, right? Like, you're going to hit that at some point. It's a question of whether you're going to extend it with some tools that can help you to be a little more
targeting,
if you like, than just going with the volume, like Lizzie said, right? And then just forgetting about, there's a whole long tail behind you that you need to take care of. And, you know, it's growing.
Like my dream, even with the strategic partners, is like, I want the heads of sales to be connected and our marketing teams to be connected. And like, it almost offloads some of that capacity, right? So if we do enough co-selling together that both of our heads of sales are very happy, I want them to go meet, I want them to build a relationship, and I want them to help maintain that. Are you seeing that Superglue helps enable some of that?
Yeah, so this multi-stakeholder email thing, what we've seen is that people, right, like the ability to identify when the AE is willing to invest in a relationship because there's opportunity. We can frame that however we want to, right? It could be like, hey, you guys should talk, or we could even with one company where it's literally, hey, talk. And then the AE gets another triggered automated message that tells the AE how to run these calls. Right? Like, hey, you don't ask for too much. You're going to share and think about the joint value proposition, etc. So we're basically, when we identify again when they need it, but then we provide them the playbook to do this well. We don't replace, you know, the conversational two heads of sales are going to have. I'm also probably not going to automate emails to the CEOs or the SVPs. There's a lot of stuff that partner teams should be investing their time in. And it's, you know, these calls or, you know, dinner with these people, etc.
What I'm thinking is like, okay, if you have five AEs on both your teams talking to each other, eventually naturally outside of the tool. Hopefully the heads of sales will connect and the partnerships person can be there. I also like that you give like a playbook, because when I have an AE get on a call with a partner, I usually want to be there because I don't trust them to say the right thing. So giving them the playbook helps alleviate some of those concerns for sure.
Yeah. And I get that. And that's a big issue. And I've seen my AEs when I ran partnerships do stupid stuff, right? And I was like, you need to kind of be aware of what's happening. And there's different ways how to build workflows around that.
But what's stupid stuff? What's the example? No, just kidding.
Well,
let's not bring all of that.
I have plenty of stories. We could do an entire session on mistakes that I've made. So I did a lot of stupid stuff myself. And then we can talk about the stuff that other people came up with on top of my stupid ideas.
I think we all have it.
Yeah.
Let's move to the go-to-market. What's your ICP? Where your product fits the best? I think I know the answer, but
So it's really interesting. So our ICP, traditionally are bigger partner teams. So 5 to 50 people is what we've seen. Sweet spot has been 10 to 20. However, we just launched a bunch of features that are geared towards smaller teams, like the audience and campaign feature that I showed you, the Gmail integration, which actually you're the first ones to hear about this. So we just released this. I've been using it myself, but we just rolled it out to customers. So this is all stuff that's really geared towards, it's very valuable for big partner teams, but it helps small partner teams get started. So we also have partner teams of 1, 2, 3 people. You do need a certain degree of scale, right? If you're just starting out, you don't know who to partner with, you don't have any type of process or join value propositions, you don't have any success, you should manually figure your stuff out. Like the moment you start with templates, with automations, with that kind of stuff, you need a certain foundation for that.
You need an entity that actually scaling oriented, essentially, right? And it's investing a lot in the partnership space. If you're at the beginning of this journey and you're trying to figure out where you fit with this whole ecosystem, probably not the best fit, but it doesn't mean that they won't get a full value. But they can start with you, and then as they grow, eventually converting into this partner-oriented organization, they can just start chipping away more and more. Is that the right definition?
Yeah. Yeah, you need a certain degree of scale success. Yeah. I would say, if you're just trying to figure stuff out and you're just not sure about it, you should probably get a free Cospim account and just start account mapping, see if there are opportunities, start having conversations. Like I said, real joint value, right? And the moment you start seeing some success, you can start thinking about stuff like this. But only, right, if you have two partners with 10 people each, build personal relationships.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think my recommendation to partnership teams in general is go build something somewhat manual and see if it has legs. And then you can always come in and automate it, even for a referral program. Start with a Google form. And if you get 10 partners and 20 deals, maybe you can start thinking about automating it.
It's really funny because I had this discussion recently. Sometimes, and not every partner team, but I see some partner teams, small partner teams that haven't figured stuff out, over invest in tech. Right. They're okay, I need this tool. And there's no foundation yet where you could, like you said, just Google Sheet would probably be fine. And then I see these massive partner teams with 50 people, 100 people, and they're on the same level, right? They have a PRM, a free Crossbeam account, not properly set up. They've never built the processes, et cetera. I think that's a big issue.
Well, they almost have the people they can throw at the problem. And you're like, no, you could get a lot more value out of this. So yeah, it makes sense for sure.
And then we see the layoffs, right? And then people are these partner people are too expensive, which is a shame, right? And I think part of the solution is thinking about how can we make our partner teams radically more productive? How can we help them do their jobs better or do more of what they're already doing?
Yeah, absolutely.
I love the radically more effective.
Well, yeah, partnerships people are too expensive to be fixing spreadsheets forever. They really are. And I think that's the constant push and pull and why, Demetrius was really going into how do you justify the cost for this without it's nice now that you have a fair amount of customers, you can show case studies and really bring that back to the team. Do you have different price points now that you have a more SMB-focused tool?
So we actually have like a lot of the stuff around like campaigns and the Gmail functionalities are free. So you really want to get people to get started for free because like you can get two values so easily, right? Like with this Gmail plugin, you install it, you can use templates. With the campaigns, you plug it to your CRM, which takes like 15 minutes. You can create audiences, run campaigns. You're going to see almost immediate impact. So it's very driven by right now size of the partner team. When we're like in the enterprise world, we do have pricing. Like, you know, if you have 1,000 AEs and we enable the AEs, that stuff starts to matter. So we move into a more enterprising like structure.
Pricing. Yeah, that makes sense. So you're doing some product-led growth on the smaller partnership side. Are you doing partner-led growth? Sales-led, marketing, what's the...
So, I mean, I'm in Chicago for Catalyst. On Thursday, we're doing an event with Crossbeam, PartnerFleet, Magentrix, and Sugar. So, yeah, classic co-marketing. We love working with other partner tech companies. We have a lot of relationships with, yeah, obviously, Crossbeam, PRMs, a lot of PRMs, you know, Eula on one hand, but then also like 360. All kinds of players that we think we can complement who have like a joint value proposition. Then we do cold outreach. I mean, I think that just matters as an early stage company is getting the word out. I'm very active on social, right, which helps kind of spread the word. So I would say that's a bit of the marketing mix. And we're very heavily lean into thought leadership. So we sort of have a newsletter where I really try to go deep in use cases. We just sent out the latest issue today where I talk about co-selling with AWS. So we try to be very tactical, and that seems to be working very well.
Yeah, especially if you're focusing on some of those bigger companies of like, what is the playbook for me to get in and figure this out? That's super educational and a good way to go about it. Do you have any competitors? I'm trying to think of like, I mean, I guess status quo is what we talked a lot about, and then maybe some CRMs, but do you have any tech competitors?
Yeah, like I think the biggest competitors really like manual processes and kind of the reluctance to or the fear of automation. We have quite a few customers that went from the news like sales engagement tools and try to tweak them for partner teams. Challenges with the sales engagement tools are built for prospecting. You need to manually push people into cadences. Cadences are very linear, right? Like I send emails or messages till I get a reply. But now we've seen that a lot. Other than that, like we've not direct competitors, like some PRMs have like basic automation capabilities. Yep. Problem is they're limited to data that's in the PRM and PRM use cases. And so there are all kinds of ways of doing stuff. But I would say the biggest hurdle for us to overcome is really, you know, the step from manual to automated and obviously kind of the ranking of tools. Right? People are very often like, oh, I'm going to get Crossbeam, then I get a PRM and then I'm out of budget. I'm out of budget after the first tool. Unfortunately, right? So we're talking about partner teams being expensive, but when it comes to tech, there is a very limited budget in partnerships.
Yeah, absolutely. I can speak for that.
Dedicated budget for partnership, right? That's the problem, right? Yeah. And I think RevOps or business systems or IT, call it whatever department is really in that space, it's rarely thinking in those terms. As someone who is that, call a RevOps leader.
You need to change the way
you design the tech stack, right? Today, I would argue there's probably 90%+ of companies, if not closer to 100%, in the active mode. Meaning there's a sales rep, there's a sales manager, there's someone who tells you, you know what, Rob or Dimitri, can you bring me this? Can we buy this? All that stuff is just rolling, and then you have a long wish list, and then you're trying to make something out of it with a limited budget that is not telling you whether there is a portion of that should go here, because your go-to-market strategy sucks. And by the way, you don't have a processes that are defined properly, so you will never figure out how much money you should go here or there. And if you want to change this, you should actually plan this. Here are the processes I need. Here's how I'm going to allocate the budget because I need these systems in these areas.
I love it. I've never thought about it that way, but you're absolutely right. The like RevOps is so overwhelmed that we're never building. We're always we're fixing holes, etc. And yeah, you're absolutely right. Totally agree. And I think it's a big issue here. Right? Yeah, great point.
So the way that I get budget for partner tech tools is because I oversee a sales team too, which is really nice insight to have on what we're spending there.
When did we last talk, Lizzie, by the way?
And I say, hey, the sales team is spending all this money on these tools. Can I just have this one extra tool? And I basically like negotiate internally. And, you know, I'm sometimes a better negotiator than my RevOps team is. So I win the battle, which is, to your point, Demetrios, not how it should be done. I would love for the RevOps team to come to me and be like, here's our plan. You know, can you help me figure out what tools are? Because maybe I don't know the partner tech space as well. And let's like build out what our tech stack is and how do we go to market and how does that interact with all the other tools we have. We need to do a whole segment on that of like, what is the new way of RevOps and how do they almost elevate their position within the company? And then people like Rob have a new person they can go sell to and not just the the partnership leader.
You know, a big lesson for us was that RevOps, especially like in these mid-sized to larger companies, RevOps always has a say. They have the budget. And that was a mistake we made for a while where it just like didn't involve RevOps properly. And they usually become your friends, right? Like, A, if you can show them that this isn't going to be some crazy implementation. And then if you can show them that, hey, we're actually automating processes, we're doing stuff that can't be done with other tools, right? Like, because that's what you see a lot, right? Like, a bunch of people buy the same tool just from different vendors. What we've seen is that they become our allies. But you're right, they always get pulled in too late, unfortunately.
I think one of the smartest things a lot of partner tech has done, and including what sounds like SuperGlue is doing, is like make the RevOps lives really easy. So the RevOps team tends to like to work with me because I'm like, it's the simplest integration. It's not like Gainsight. You're not going to spend months and months and maybe years updating implementers. It's a CRM integration and you're off to the races. And that's a good way to become friends with RevOps on top of everything else.
I've literally put like a clause into contracts where I said like, if the implementation takes more than like technical implementation, like not InfoSec, right? Just like the data sync, if it takes more than 30 minutes, we give you X or you can, you know, back out of this. Because I mean, RevOps being lied to all the time, right? Like everybody, I see that with a lot of big PRMs with the implementations where this ends up being like 6, 9, even longer months projects.
Yeah. And you've already paid a year of the contract. We don't have a budget. It's hard. So what's next for SuperGlue on the roadmap? You gave us some insight to the latest features like Gmail. I want to hear your opinion. What keeps coming up for me is like, will you ever help on the partner marketing side or do you feel like that's live somewhere else?
That's a really good question. So we have a few partner marketing teams that do stuff. We don't replace like a new partner, your newsletter, right? They're great tools that are way better than us. If you want like the HTML newsletter, we've seen people do stuff like we had this one partner marketing team. They're like, we need to run a campaign where we ask our partners to sponsor like big events. They're like, what we've seen traditionally is if we send this official newsletter email, nobody replies. So they basically triggered, set up these campaigns in their partner managers' names. Triggering messages, like personal messages, hey, I would really love you to, you know, sponsor this and here's why. And that's like a unique use case that I didn't expect. I've seen partner marketing think about the partner lifecycle that integrate SuperGlue. But to be quite frank, it is something that partner marketing has a marketing tech stack mostly. I am excited. So there are a lot of discussions we're having around attribution. I think there are lots of opportunities like solving attribution in a manner that doesn't necessarily involve like processes and manual tagging, but they're big AI opportunities, right? Big data sets, etc. There's like a lot of stuff we think about. Personally, like the more short-term stuff, like the Gmail integration, we're going to roll out a lot of stuff because that's very, very, you know, if you're in sales, you have Outreach or Sales Loft, you use that stuff all the time.
Yeah.
And we've, with what we just released, we can allow a lot of stuff. Similar stuff, right? Like you also need some templates and snippets and shortcuts, but also like stuff that's unique to partnerships and bring stuff into the place where you work. So that's something that I think we've got a bunch of stuff we're going to be releasing over the next weeks.
Yeah, a lot of like tactical short-term things that help replicate an outreach or outreach tool. AI and like potentially even like predictive insights are really interesting. So since you're seeing... you know, the crossbeam overlap data, maybe the PRM data and the CRM data, you can start to say like, hey, I think this is a place where you could use partnerships more. Yep. And is that kind of where your head is going there?
Yeah, absolutely. So predictive analytics, funny, like when we raised our pre-seed, right, like pre-AI, that was already like a big topic, you know, in the pitch deck and on the agenda. We didn't implement it to this day, not because it's gotten pretty straightforward actually with like, you know, current tools. However, these are even more sophisticated use case than the rule-based stuff. And it's even more of a black box. And one thing that we've seen also, that's also why we kind of took the use case I showed you, looks simple, but there's complexity behind it. So one thing that we've seen and that we've learned is that a lot of the stuff we enable is so sophisticated that it's just like kind of overwhelming. People are afraid to get started. Like what I hear is people are like, oh, we're not ready. Actually, we moved towards the simpler use cases rather than the more complex ones, which is kind of counterintuitive, but probably just speaks to us being overly ambitious with some of the stuff we enable.
Yeah. Well, and I think going, you know, what your ICP has been, it makes sense. They kind of know what the use case is and what they're trying to do and what works, and they're trying to scale that. And as you move down market or down partnership size teams, it will be helpful to have something that says like, here are all the places we think you could use partnerships. I think that's where you can start to help roadmap them, right? Like they have enough integrations, they have some things going on, but here are the ones partners we think you should co-sell with. And here's when the deals are getting stalled or like the area or time we think you can have an impact there. So that's exciting thing about it. And then attribution is always exciting. I mean, I said that attribution is solved for by other tools, but it's not really. It's just there are ways to do it. Yeah.
Everybody, yeah, it's funny. We have this discussion around attribution and there are a lot of people trying to figure it out. And yeah, I feel like it's like the hot topic right now for a lot of teams.
For me, marketing couldn't solve it for more than a decade.
Yeah. And it's still not really solved, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh. It's still a holy grail in terms of, you know, what do you think about the multi-attribution? Okay, all right. Yeah. Here we go again. Actually, I want to ask you, what do you think to that attribution process in terms of the industry? We all know that every industry has their own specific play, right? Yeah. And if you're selling oil and gas, you know, it's going to be very, very different, very different conversations, very different relationship building process. You know, there are some principles that are unilateral, but in general, people know what they can expect, right?
Yeah.
And that's different than if you are in the MarTech or FinTech industry, right? Which is also very specific mindset. So how to build a tool like this that is more industry oriented or is giving more use cases that each of these industries can leverage from, adopt with some tweaks and a little bit of calibration.
Like geared towards attribution?
Yes, because attribution is going to be this layer of differentiated, right? Like that's what it is, right?
Yeah. You know, like right now when it comes to attribution and like very like focused on SaaS, right? Like where we play, right? Like because tech company partnerships play a bigger role, right? Due to APIs, etc. I see like the way that people are currently trying to solve it is via processes. And we're back to the issue that we had that Lizzie described initially about AEs not looking for all of this and that. And we expect people to tag partners here and there. And there's all kinds of stuff that, first of all, people don't do it. And then they play games. And we end up back in square one where the leadership is like, you know what? F this, we're just going to look at source revenue, right? I don't care. It's just sourced revenue. We can track that, right? You submitted a referral and we closed that deal, which isn't like what all the partnership does. And I think like influence revenue is like something that's tricky to figure out. And I think we need to find a way to do this without all of these manual processes. And people listen to gong calls and do all this crazy stuff that wastes even more of their time to figure out attribution to justify their role. What you can do really well with Gen AI, you can work on large data sets, identify patterns and build more objective rules to be like, hey, this is true influence. And what I'm afraid of when it comes to building an attribution model or approach is that every company you sell it to, they're going to have their own way of thinking, because we don't have standards, right? Like, we're not in marketing, at least we have, like, you know, different mindsets, like first touch, last touch. Like, there are different mindsets and philosophies, and they're established, but I'm afraid of, like, partner teams. Everybody does their own thing, and those might be geared towards, like, what they try to prove. That's going to be what makes building a solution difficult. But I think we can figure something out there.
Yeah, it's like, can you build a tool where it allows companies, to Dimitri's point, like, to input what their rules are, and does that help automate it? I mean, that seems easy while I'm saying it, but challenging in actual practice. I mean, I think the way I think about partnerships is, like, if you're building a great tech and channel partnership program, it should influence most of your deals. People should be coming to your website, seeing what integrations you have, and that should be part of their decision-making process. Or they see a co-marketing event, or they talk to someone at a product they're using and they mention you. And that's, like, the whole point. It's part of, like, your brand and your go-to-market, and it should touch everything. That's great. What are we actually, like, accounting the revenue for? And so that becomes the different question. And if you have a company that believes in that first idea of, like, it should influence everything, then what do we actually want to give you credit for? And so it's hard because the partnerships teams play a sales role on the channel side, but they almost play more of a marketing role on the tech side. And yeah, we'd be nice to have standards. It'd be nice for us to come up with standards.
Let me give you a counter argument. I don't think the standard is something that will solve the problem. I know it sounds like a silver bullet. I think it sounds good.
Look at the selling
process. Quickly, this became ineffective, right? Like, there was the standard thinking, you hire SDRs, bring AEs, and then just, you know, they're bombarding people with the emails, phone calls, and that's how it goes. And people started to realize, damn, if I'm selling a product for $5,000 and I'm having all these people on my payroll, I'm pissing away money, forgive me my French, right? And now I'm having the CFO hat. You have to go to the CRO or head of sales or someone who is managing these teams and say, hey, you better cut down that. Here we go. We have a PLG. Now, the PLG doesn't have a standard. You can use it as a utility, or you can use it as a whole process. Because as a utility, it's going to be addition to your existing process that was called standard. I think standard will always evolve. Actually, how I think about the attribution, there are two fundamental things that companies need to solve. And the one is the process. Mm-hmm. Another one is a function. Because, yeah, you say these are the steps, right? There's an element of telling people how it works. People tell you this, then you do this, and if that, and this, and this, and this, and this, and this, right? It's a typical logical steps diagram, right? And as a function, I'll call it educational function, right? Educational element of your organization that is giving you an ability to learn. The first one, you can probably figure it out, you can tweak. The second one is really hard. As anything in education, it takes time,
but we didn't optimize the time.
And that's why companies fail in attribution, because their function of educating is not working. That's my whole idea about the attribution problem.
Yeah.
So if you want to solve it, and I'll finish with that, you essentially need to build the tools that are enabling them in the learning process, right? They need to start seeing that this is working or this isn't working.
Yeah.
And then they just go back to the process and adjust. It's not the other way around, but most people think.
No, I like that. I like the rant. I think.
Same. Oh, it's yeah.
I think generative AI is actually, like, opening up that door to hopefully be able to build the learnings or the insights and pull more out of it. To your point, Rob, and, like, how you're thinking about solving attribution.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think we don't just implement another thing and then we're like, hey, this is
the gold standard.
Trust me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you think partner tech is doing in general? Like, where do you see it going? You're obviously integrated with a lot of the tools. What's kind of your outlook over the next couple of years?
I think, to be very honest, like, partnerships aren't a priority right now. And that also means that partner tech is not getting all the stuff we talked about, right? The RevOps team is going to focus on sales, first of all, and then marketing, and then I don't know. Maybe the intern can do a little partnership stuff. It's a tricky space. We also have the issue. I think there is frustration with legacy tools that didn't deliver on the value, or at least not in the partnership space, right? Like they did maybe in channel. And so I think there is frustration. You see people, you know, going from one PRM to the next. So I do think we're, you know, it's like SaaS overall, right? Like life isn't easy right now, but there are always opportunities that people are starting partner tech companies, right? We're not the only ones. I mean, like the companies that we're doing this event within like 2 days, like they're all startups, right? Like I'm even going to put Crossbeam in that category, though they're a bit older, but they're a younger company. So I'm optimistic, but I'm very well aware that, you know, the next year or so is not going to be the easiest.
I mean, I think you have a good strategy going up market, right? Because they will invest in partnership strategies and then having a freemium style tool for smaller companies or smaller partnerships teams. It'll be interesting to see what happens. I think the expectation is like in the past, you would pay a lot for a PRM that didn't do much. And that is no longer the expectation. And it's like it needs to implement quickly and drive results quickly. One of my biggest complaints is like, why aren't you guys more integrated? Like, why do I need my partner to log in to update their listing here, send their referrals here, do this here? And so I think Superloo is well positioned to help bring a lot of that together.
I'm fully with you. I think we need to get away from these crazy implementations. I think you guys are using Eula, right?
We are. Yeah. It's easy.
Yeah, but that's how it should be. I mean, I'm probably not naive, right? Because I've built MarTech that integrates into big MarTech platforms, and we have the same with Superloo. We use this without data, right? I have people that are like, oh, can I use you guys with like CMSV uploads? I'm like, no. If you don't integrate, you don't have the data, so you can't use us. So I'm always surprised, like, why that's so difficult and why, you know, even big organizations with PRMs like end up telling you, oh, no, we don't probably synchronize, or we have like this manual process of moving stuff around. So I think that's the expectation. I think the expectation isn't, everybody talks about the importance of integrations. I think the importance isn't just to be integrated in other tools, it's also to make that very easy.
Yes.
I think I agree with everything you said about logging here, doing this, doing that. I mean, this is just against what Rob said. It's not radically efficient, right? Like it's not effective way of operating and using your resources. And, you know, I think we're often forgetting about this, especially when the companies were going on the funding spree and they were just raising money for nothing or very little on the elevated multiples. And I was like, oh, okay, I can just get anything right now. So, but it doesn't mean you have to spend it, right? It's just going back to the same household budget management, right? Like you just don't spend everything because you have money. Here, you have to have some ROI, and that narrows down to the productivity. There you go.
Absolutely. So, Rob, you've called out a bunch of companies and partners throughout this, but anyone you want to give a specific shout out to that you think is doing cool things in the B2B tech space?
Oh, I hope I'm not going to miss anybody. I mean, you know, I mentioned the ones we're doing stuff with Crossbeam.
No pressure, Rob.
It's on record. You know, now you know why people have this little sheet of paper. But I love Crossbeam. I like in the PRM space. We're doing the stuff with Magentrix. I think what Greg is doing with Eula is really cool, and it's like pushing people to think about stuff differently. I love like Sugar is doing great stuff in the hyperscaler marketplace stuff. Like PartnerFleet, they're doing incredibly well. They're doing really cool stuff and taking marketplace, right? The marketplace and making it more data-driven, pushing data in there. And then I think a lot of the bigger PRMs are starting to wake up and think about stuff differently. Those are probably ones I want to, you know, that I can think of right now. And I hope I didn't forget anybody else.
It's going to start to become clear who like my partnership tech cult is, because these people come out and just mention each other all the time.
Okay, good. I think like there is a new mindset, right? I think in partnership, you had this like
established older school.
Legacy players. Exactly. They are like these old school players that are like, trying to do stuff. And then you had like the nothing happened for like quite some time. And now we've got these other companies that are starting to rethink how things should work and I kind of don't have the issue of having to deal with all of their old stuff, etc. The, you know, the legacy tech that they built, and they can rethink a lot of the way that things that are being done.
Yeah, and it was a lot of people who were running partnerships programs with the old school tech at a XYZ company, and were like, I think we could do this better. And that is, you know, way I think you fall into that along with Euler and PartnerFleet and even Crossbeam and Reveal and what they've done. So it's exciting. It's like a new wave of energy there. And I think it will, I think to your point, the next year is going to be hard, but hopefully it will start to take off again like it was over the last few years. So it's exciting.
Yeah.
Did you prepare 3 tips for anything?
No, he will have some tricks for sure.
I always know. No, I mean, irrespective of whether you think about a tool like SuperGlue, think about like processes. Think a lot more about processes, think more about the partner lifecycle and how you can, you know, structure what is being done. I think people claim they do, but I always tell people like, show me your process, right? Show the documentation of your process. And if you don't have that, you don't really have a process. You just let everybody do their thing. I would leave it at that. It's like my one tip. But I think that's a big one where I think there are a lot of opportunities. And think about processes involves a lot. Think about data, right? Like, really looking at your data and trying to read it and figure out like what that means, where we start, what are the, you know, more RevOps work, right? Like thinking about what are the bottlenecks, what are my expectations? Dimitri, you talked about like backwards engineering, right? Starting from the goal and then figure out what I need to do. I think we need to do more of that. That is my tip, and that's a big opportunity. It's difficult. It's really freaking difficult. Partner people don't have that experience. They don't do that a lot.
As I talk to more and more people who have more of an ops background and are interested in getting into partnerships, I'm like, you have a chance. Like, yeah. I think where there's going to be more and more of this need to have some type of partner ops, even if you're a partner manager that can help with on the ops side and talk that language with RevOps. So I think it's going to hopefully be a space that grows, and there's a version of that within the revenue operations or the operations organization. So, cool. Well, this was excellent. Thank you so much, Rob, for coming on while you're about to attend a conference to chat with us. And we'll chat with you soon.
Robert, thank you so much for having me. And yeah, talk to you soon.
Good luck with Catalyst.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the RevTech Podcast. Please subscribe on the listening platform of your choice and leave us a review to let us know how we're doing.